Undisciplinary is recorded on the unceded lands of the Wadawurrung peoples of the Kulin Nation in Geelong and the Gadigal peoples of the Eora Nation in Sydney. We pay our respects to elders past and present.
All right, let's go.
All right. So, Chris.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Takes. Are we going to do that?
Yeah, go.
I wonder whether we should just call it Bad Takes. Hot take, good take, bad take.
No, are we ever going to talk about good takes though?
Well, we don't know whether they're good takes or bad takes yet.
Oh, yeah. As actually, we can say, as Cake has taught us.
Who?
One person's bad take. Okay, that's right. Good take.
Don't smoke. All is used on those.
Concerns about it encouraging sexual promiscuity are unfounded.
Just how much free help can people receive from the government?
After not pairing office cake to passive smoking.
All right, so welcome to the recently named Good Take, Bad Take? ? So this is, I guess, trying to throw in a bit more ambiguity and possibilities than the previously just straight up bad takes. But looking, I guess, broadly in the area of health is what we're interested in. Is that fair?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we'll try to keep this as quick and punchy and delightful as possible. So we're going to tackle three hot topics straight off the press, one being a return to Bluey and a controversial issue that has happened in a recent Bluey episode called Exercise. The other one is war rhetoric in COVID and a recent publication from some public health people. And the final one is James Packer, a big casino mogul here in Australia, who recently donated, I believe, $7 million to the University of New South Wales to look at mental health. Okay, so straight off the top then.
Right. So I am a total kind of naive Bluey person. I do not have young children, and so Bluey doesn't make its way into my life. But the headlines around Bluey did recently, where Bluey was accused of fat shaming. However, I haven't watched the episode, and Chris, I would love to hear you riff on that.
Well, I don't think we need to watch or read things to have strong opinions about them. But yes, I have watched both episodes because there was the initial episode, and then apparently there was some kickback, although a lot of the articles say that there was kickback and social media outrage, but don't provide a lot of evidence for that. Having said that, I was just recently watching a YouTube video with somebody who was outraged by the whole thing. So then as a result of this, they edited it. So they changed Bluey, this particular episode called Exercise. And I'll run you through the change. Actually is quite minimal. I do some editing on this blog, and podcast, and I think some of that editing work would have been more difficult than what they did. So the episode starts off, this is the original episode called Exercise, starts off with they're in the bathroom. It's a bathroom scene. I believe one of the kids might be having a bath, and the dad dog, who's called Bandit, he gets on the scales, grabs his stomach, is feeling a bit, like makes a few groaning noises, and then in comes Chili, the mum dog, and she also gets on the scale and does similar sort of like groaning noises and dissatisfaction, essentially, I guess, is what she's emoting to, I would say, the adult audience, but obviously children pick these things up too. Then there's a suggestion that they should do some exercise. Cut to the opening credits. This episode's called Exercise. That's the way they always do it for those who haven't listened. And then they're in the backyard, and Bandit, the dad dog, is trying to do exercise, but his kids are getting in the way And it turns into, as most of these episodes do, a kind of imaginative play where he ends up kind of using the kids as exercise equipment and doing stuff running around the yard. And then eventually Chili, the mum dog, comes and she is also participating in this very active imaginative play. And then the episode finishes with Bandit in the GP's office. The GP's just going through, you know, blood pressure and those sorts of things, and says something along the lines of, you know, everything's looking great. Do you get to the gym much? And then I think Bandit says, the gym comes to me. In the point being, him playing with his kids has given him his exercise. End of episode.
Okay.
How do you feel about that?
I've got a question.
Yeah.
When they're running around, do they use 2 legs or 4 legs?
That is an excellent question. They use 2 legs.
Okay.
It's like that funny picture of how would dogs wear pants? Would they wear 2-legged pants?
That's not a picture I'm familiar with. Okay. I was just, you know, trying to picture them playing in the backyard. What did that look like? Look, I'm a big fan in not having a scale. So I think the premise of the whole thing is kind of a bummer, but also very realistic. I've never had a scale in my life. I will never have a scale in my life. And I think that's the idea of jumping on the scale and being sad about it is a real bummer.
Mm.
With that said, I know that's a really common thing. So presumably, so that is that was the crux of it, right? That there was sort of a fat shamey.
So yeah, so the way that it now has been edited, the episode starts with them doing exercise in the backyard and ends with them going to the GP and the GP saying, good job on all the exercise.
Huh. So why are they going to the GP?
I think just a regular checkup.
Hmm.
But it seems to me that the narrative, in cutting out that first bit and having it being resolved somewhat in the GP's office, so they were upset or feeling, it seemed also part of it was the pressure of trying to be able to do the exercise, get to the gym, all of that sort of stuff. Mm. But there was a kind of resolution in the end that in playing with your kids, you're getting what you need for your blood pressure to be, you know, whatever it's supposed to be, good.
I got to say, the whole thing's kind of weird. Just hearing it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that it follows this usual kind of formula that they have. But so, yeah, the crux of the outrage that I could find is whether it's good to show a norm that is relatable, the getting on the scales, feeling sad about your body, or should they not, or engage with that norm in a different way, I guess is the other option. So either, like they usually do, try to have some kind of point of everyday life that is relatable, whether it's a good or a bad thing. That's a reality, is that most people do have scales, do weigh themselves, do feel pressured to or not to be able to or not be able to go to the gym. Mm. And then it's trying to, I guess, counter that by saying, look, just playing with your kids and getting all that activity is more than enough, or that's a good thing, what have you.
Yeah. The enough thing is weird. Like, enough for what? But yeah, I hear you. And I wasn't trying to be sanctimonious with the scale thing because, you know.
No, I mean, I don't have scales either. I do have kitchen ones. And it does, not having scales in the house becomes a bummer when you're going to the airport and you're trying to work out if you've got 7 kilos or under. But that's another.
I see. Yeah, I have a different approach. I just assume that I can hoist it over my head with ease into that overhead locker, then no one's going to even question it. or something.
All right. Well, we can have another strategy, another episode on whether that's a good strategy.
All right.
Anyway, back to Bluey. So, yeah, it all seemed to revolve around that. So there were some people who were saying that this is fat shaming, buying into and perpetuating people's dissatisfaction with their bodies. And others were saying, no, I totally relate to this. And this was a helpful episode because it, you know, I guess made me feel that playing with my kids in the backyard is sufficient. And also the relatability that, you know, even Chili, the cartoon dog, feels sad about her body sometimes too.
Well, I guess it comes down to, you know, are we creating ideal scenarios or real scenarios, right?
So, yeah.
So it seems delightful but also crazy, the idea that people don't have those sorts of struggles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not very useful. You know, there's a lot in the media about people wanting to see themselves reflected in stories.
Well, and I think the shows, because it has done a lot of this kind of, I guess, pedagogical work, really, for parents and children, it sets itself up in some ways to be criticized on these grounds. Like, I think they do see themselves as doing more than just merely entertaining, because then, yeah, there's a whole range of other issues, like if Bluey has a friend who's perhaps someone who Bandit and Chili don't want her to be friends with anymore, how does that happens in life?
Does that happen on the show?
No, it
doesn't. Oh, because that would be really cool.
Yeah. But just to quickly finish up on this before moving on to the next topic, it does raise the meta question, and I was talking to Lisa, Dr. Lisa Mitchell, who was on the previous episode when we were talking about Bluey and aging. Unfortunately, she couldn't join us for this one, but she made the very good point of, well, if they can edit and change this one, how come they don't feel the need, despite criticism, to edit or change the aging one? If you have any thoughts, tweet at us at undisciplinary underscore.
All right, interesting.
All right, we nailed it. Good take, bad take. Should have they edited the episode?
I think I'm going to go with no, having not seen it. Having only listened to your thing, I think it, yep.
Good, because that's what I also think.
High five. All right.
So, next one. A couple of weeks ago, I saw tweeted, and I'm not going to name names, partly for recrimination, partly because I've forgotten all the details. But a US bioethics center and affiliated public health center had a joint book, which in the title, and it had a, it was an edited volume, and in the title, it was basically something like, what can we learn from the war against COVID? And having just read a book with containing an essay in it from a colleague, Eben Kirksey's essay, which featured in The Viral Politics of COVID, and his essay was Living in Peace with Coronavirus, and he examined some of this war rhetoric. It's really struck me as, I mean, even before reading Eben's piece and knowing about the problematic use of war rhetoric in public health, it just struck me as one of the obvious lessons to learn from COVID, from cancer, from obesity, from AIDS, is using war rhetoric for in the context of public health is just a terrible idea.
Yeah.
And it surprised me that some bioethicists and public health policy people, like I can understand, you know, Scott Morrison, the Australian Prime Minister at the time, wanting to sort of sound all tough on COVID and using sort of a war rhetoric, but for people working in public health and health ethics, I found it really surprising. Should I be surprised by that?
I don't think you should be surprised by the public. I think public health is still all over a war analogy. My memory of that, they wrote a book, right? And it was it was like an independent panel of thinkers on COVID. Yeah. I don't recall who any of them were.
And then they had a video that was so dramatic, and it had like this, because for the book launch, they had a video that was really, it was like a blockbuster thriller kind of beating drums in the background.
Total movie soundtrack. So I'm saying bad take absolutely to that, because we know better. You know, it's just war on everything has not been a success. So making COVID a battleground as well is not useful.
Also, aesthetically and for originality, it's just so lazy and terrible. So in trying to find this book, I did a Google book search for War Against COVID. And here are some of the first samples that come up. The War Against COVID-19. War Against COVID-19, An Alarm to Mankind. Global War Against COVID-19. The War Against a Pandemic. People's Warfare Against COVID-19. Deadliest Enemy, Our War Against Killing Germs. Will We Win the War Against COVID-19? The War Against Viruses. And that's all just on the first page. In addition to perpetuating harmful and militaristic interventions to address public health issues, it's just a really lazy and boring title.
Yeah, totally. You will get lost in the crowd, warmongers.
So bad take.
Bad take also lends itself to bad campaigns, bad public health campaigns. I'm just thinking about the vaccine campaign in Australia, the Arm Yourself one, right? Yeah. It was all about being tough and having your army arm. I don't know, some, you know, army arm rolled up and you, no, just don't do it. It appeals to a certain person, I suppose, but no. Nah.
Okay, and so the last one that we're going to talk about today, and this is news that just came in yesterday, is that James Packer, who is an Australian businessman, son of Kerry Packer, who was also an Australian businessman, and his grandfather was also an extremely wealthy businessman, has donated $7 million towards mental health research in Australia. So at face value, that seems good, right?
Sure.
And maybe it still is. This may be an ambiguous good or bad take. So he's donated this to the University of New South Wales, based in Sydney, and it's also going to establish a chair, the James Packer Chair in Mental Health. So some, actually James Packer Chair in Mood Disorders. So some illustrious public health professor will get that chair. I do wonder, did they get a literal chair?
I wondered that. I did wonder. Don't know.
So part of this has been his own struggle with mental health. In a statement, he sort of makes no secret about his own mental health problems. And so I guess while this podcast has a somewhat irreverent tone, we are wanting to sort of take that seriously. He did talk about his own struggles with bipolar or his bipolar diagnosis in 2020. However, I guess that came out in the context of a royal commission, I believe, in relation to some of the casinos that he runs and operates. So essentially this money is coming from gambling.
Yep.
and going into mental health, which seems somewhat problematic. In there are currently still moratoriums about universities accepting money from, even sort of philanthropic money from, tobacco. And there are some charities that have long refused to accept money from gambling because of its association with gambling's association with so many social ills, including domestic violence and mental health conditions. Mm-hmm. So it seems not a straight up good thing, I guess, yeah. But also neither is it. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, ambiguous. Yeah, I'm a little bit. So my thinking was, I doubt that UNSW would have agreed or happily taken a donation to be the Star Casino chair of mood disorders.
This is true.
So the fact that it's a person's name, and perhaps also the fact that he has bipolar, I don't know if that's relevant or not, but it seems to make it different. I was playing with lots of different examples of this in my head last night, and I was thinking about the Sacklers, and I don't want to suggest that that the Packers have done as much harm, I suppose, as the Sacklers. So the Sacklers, for people who don't know, are the people who own Purdue Pharma and make OxyContin. And knowingly had very aggressive sales techniques for marketing that highly addictive drug as widely as possible. Mm-hmm. And the Sackler name is being taken off galleries and buildings everywhere, right? So the Sacklers have had a huge kind of...
Yeah, I just saw, I think Oxford have just taken their name off something.
Yeah. So I think this is probably kind of a niche story, but it's for those of us who have been following it for quite a long time, it's been very, very interesting to watch. There's a documentary out at the moment featuring Nan Golden, who's an artist, and her campaign to get the Sackler name removed from galleries. She's also an addict. So, I mean, the Sacklers are terrible. I'm confident in saying that, and that I don't think they should be allowed to have their names all over buildings just because they've given heaps of money. With that said, it's really hard. Yeah. It's a big mess.
It does surprise me that there hasn't even been I haven't found a mention of this being a problem in any of the media reporting.
No,
certainly not from the Vice Chancellor of University of New South Wales, who accepted it. And that surprises me because there has been, as I mentioned before, I'm pretty sure, I shouldn't just try to sort of Google live, but I remember during and in response to the tsunami in 2005, the Packers made a large donation to World Vision, and under those circumstances, I think Tim Costello, who was the head of World Vision at the time, I think said that under those circumstances, because it was such a terrible situation, that they would accept the donation, but ordinarily they didn't accept donations due to the association with gambling. This is purely all on my memory, so don't sue me if I've got these details wrong. But it seems that there hasn't been any, and I guess my concern, you know, tell us if this is just posturing and sort of some kind of purity game, but I do think there's a concern there, and I wonder whether the concern is as well that the state of the university, in desiring and being so hungry for money, whether it's philanthropic or whether it's industry collaborations or whether it's grants, is losing some of its sort of moral stance on research. Maybe that's not the case here. I know Sydney University had that whole collaboration or accepting money from Blackmores, the supplement company, and people were, and again, people, even though they accepted the money, people were critical and made complaints. But also maybe, as you mentioned, maybe the fact that he has bipolar, this makes a difference. I don't know.
And, you know, maybe it's going to make some good and undo some of the bad, but you could also undo some of the bad by not investing heavily in a harmful whatever. Yeah.
So good take, bad take. Unsure.
Unsure. Yeah,
I will go with unsure as well. And just as I say that, there, I did find an article from 2011, Costello embroiled in gambling controversy. And this, again, is a controversy among different charity leaders disputing whether charities should take money from the Australian Hotels Association, which a lot of that money comes from gambling.
And, you know, it's not like we're going to see the British Tobacco Chair of Public Health at the University of Sydney or the...
No, but what about one of the heirs of them? What are their names? Smokey Joe.
yeah. So I think it's interesting to think about if it's just the brand name or if it's the where the money has come from, you know, if it's an individual's name, and what work does that do?
And maybe that is, to it's not, as you said, the Crown Casino, because, I think he's Crown rather than Star.
Oops.
Chair in mood disorders, but maybe connecting his own story with that. Who knows?
Yeah, be well spent.
That's right. Oh, well, thanks for listening to Good Take, Bad Take.
Thank you.
Don't smoke or misuse condoms, or even just...
The concerns about it encouraging sexual promiscuity are unfounded.
Just how much free help can people receive from the government
after not pairing office cake to passive smoking?